And so good morning and welcome to everyone. First thing, I think I may take the liberty of speaking for all of us in the community in wishing you peace, contentment, and joy as we let go of the old year 2024 and welcome in the new year 2025. Later today, we'll begin our annual New Year retreat, and we're glad to be expecting a good number of guests for it this year. It's heartening to see people choosing to celebrate the changing of the year with meditation rather than some of the alternatives. And I also want to apologize for my voice. Yesterday we did our renewal of vows ceremony, and I think I talked myself out. So I'll do my best. I have a cough drop in the side of my mouth here. The approach of each new year inspires many of us to make New Year's resolutions, and there are common ones such as exercising more, losing weight, saving money. There are altruistic ones such as keeping to the precepts, being kinder to others, practicing generosity, and so on. The list is limitless. And we've all heard the accompanying jokes, haven't we, about the futility of these resolutions and how quickly they're forgotten. The difficulty is in maintaining the initial commitment. I'm not in the habit of making New Year's resolutions just because of that difficulty, and I'm not quite ready to change that yet. However, there is something coming up in my training that is growing more insistent, and that is letting go. Now, we've all turned on our electronic devices and seen the initials LG, right? I've turned on many electronic devices and seen the two initials LG, wondered what they meant. Well, letting go. I can remind myself every time I see them, let go. So I've begun to think of letting go also in terms of making vows. While for me, anyway, a New Year's resolution such as losing weight or quitting smoking, which I don't do, may come from outside, that is, from the conditioned self, the inclination towards vow and towards letting go seems to be arising from within, from the heart of meditation. As a new monk, I heard, whether arising from my own mind or in the words of another, I don't recall, but I heard, you have to give up everything, which at the present time seems to be returning at full strength. I believe at some point there have been a vow made to do this, and I'll get back to this later. But now let's start where we are right now, or at least in the very near past. Let's consider the verse we just recited, which ends, I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. For those who are new here, you may not have realized that your visit would involve making a vow. You notice that we all recite that verse together. It's for all of us, not just the congregation, not just the monk giving the talk, everyone. So we recite the verse. We all make that vow to make the Buddha's truth one with ourselves. And how do we do that? What does it really mean to make a vow? In the narrowest sense of the lecture verse that we recited, we fulfill the vow by listening to the talk and by giving it our full attention as best we can. It may seem that there's a monk up here giving a talk to you over there, but that's not quite how it seems to work. I'm really giving the talk to all of us, including myself, doing the best I can to express the inexpressible for all of us. And we all vow, for the time being, to let go of our boredom, restlessness, discomfort, I'd rather be bungee jumping, and so on, and we do this talk together. Keeping the vow to make the Buddha's truth one with ourselves. The inclination that's coming up for me towards vow led me to pick up a book called Living by Vow by the contemporary Soto Zen teacher Shohaku Okumura Roshi, and which informs much of this talk. I admit that I've tried to avoid making formal vows sometimes because of the difficulty in keeping commitments and the fear that to break such a vow would bring terrible consequences. So why not just skip making it? Here's how Shohaku Okumura Roshi explains it. When we vow, we feel we have a duty. Usually, taking a vow is like making a promise. If we don't keep it, we feel bad or fear that we might be punished. But vow in Buddhism is not like that. It's not something we do with our intellect or shallow emotion. We vow toward the Buddha, toward something absolute and infinite. I would add that we also vow with the Buddha nature in all of us, the source of our aspiration to practice. I said I've tried to avoid making vows, but in reality I make them daily, sometimes without even realizing it. Those of us who take the precepts vow to keep them every day, all day and all night. As monks, we renew our vows in a formal ceremony that includes not only the precepts, but the bodhisattva vows as well. However innumerable beings may be, I vow to save them all. However inexhaustible the passions may be, I vow to transform them all. However limitless the Dharma may be, I vow to comprehend it completely. However infinite the Buddha's truth is, I vow to realize it. Sounds like a large order. It is. Sounds impossible, doesn't it? And the ceremony also includes the verse of repentance, which recognizes that we aren't able to keep those vows perfectly and that we're willing to confess our mistakes, let them go, and at the same time to resolve to keep doing the very best we can. So we take those bodhisattva vows and we do keep them the very best we can. Sometimes our mistakes are the things that are most difficult to let go of. So going on with letting go, and I'd like to thank Reverend Master Mayon for talking about letting go in her talk last week. It sort of opened the door for this one. I've been noticing for some time that I'm more interested in dispersing the possessions I already have than in acquiring any more new ones. After all, the date of my death is nearer in time than the date of my birth. In other words, I'm old. Several members of our community have already died, and they've left a surprising amount of stuff to be dealt with. And I once happened across an article somewhere entitled something like The Swedish Art of Pre-Death Cleaning, which reinforced my vague inclination of de-acquisitiveness. So I'm trying to work on that. But my focus here isn't on dispersing personal possessions. In the words of great Master Dogen, this body is as transient as dew on the grass. Quickly, the body passes away. In a moment, life is gone. Although I'm not consciously thinking about death in every moment of the day, the words of Dogen do carry more impact for me now than they did when I was 35 or 65. The question is how to go about dispersing the mental, emotional, and spiritual possessions, and possessions is in quotes, as well as the material ones. Would that it were easy. Truthfulness requires me to say right here that letting go isn't all that easy, and that's where making a vow can help. Recall that teaching I received long ago, you have to give up everything. My response at that time amounted to shrugging this off with such thoughts as, well, haven't I given up my beloved apartment where I lived contentedly alone and come to live in a place where I share sleeping quarters with 19 of my fellow human beings? Haven't I given up my life in the beautiful city of San Francisco to come and live on this dusty rock that could blow up at any time? No, actually, I hadn't given those things up, as my thoughts and emotions lingered on, longing for them. Although deep down it was my aspiration, giving up everything, even the opinion that San Francisco was more beautiful than Mount Shasta, turned out to be more challenging than I imagined. But just because something is challenging, that doesn't mean we don't vow to do it. Sometimes the vow takes us rather than the other way around. In my experience, every time I sit down to meditate, I'm making a vow to follow this teaching of giving everything up. Shohaku Okumura Roshi cites the 20th century Japanese Zen master, Uchiyama Roshi, who was his teacher, who offers this quote from Great Master Dogen Shobo Genzo. We must know that the whole world of Zazen, that is, sitting meditation, and the whole world of other things are completely different. How is this so, we might ask? The world of other things can be seen as the world of samsara, or suffering. Considering the first three of the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, existence is subject to suffering. There is a cause of suffering, and there is a cessation of suffering. Don't we all know the world of suffering? And its cause of clinging? So why do we cling? What is the basis of clinging? Isn't it thoughts and emotions, habits, opinions, views, fears? And the source of all that is past conditioning. We cling to that which we associate with pleasant thoughts and feelings, while turning away from that which has caused us pain. Letting go of our attachments to thoughts, emotions, opinions, and views opens the Dharma gate to the world where things are completely different. That is, to the world of the cessation of suffering, what Great Master Dogen calls the whole world of Zazen, or meditation. I don't recall the first time I received meditation instruction. It was at a Zen temple of a different lineage, and the practice they taught me was slightly different from our practice here. But at Shasta Abbey, I learned the practice of just sitting with no deliberate thought. I was taught that, of course, thoughts arise, sensations arise, emotions arise, and that's as it should be. This is called natural thought. When we get caught up in it, this is deliberate thought. As Reverend Master Jiyu taught us, we can see all those things that arise from the point of view of someone standing under a highway bridge with all the traffic passing overhead. We neither try to push the cars off the road, nor do we hop in and go for a ride. Wait a minute, of course we do. Sometimes we try to clear our bodies and minds of all sensations and thoughts whatsoever. Other times we hop in and go for a ride all the way to the end of the road when the bell rings at the end of meditation. The point is not to judge or criticize ourselves when this happens, but simply to return to our sitting place. I often find at such times that my eyes have gone out of focus, so I refocus them. I might make subtle adjustments to my posture in order to sit up straighter, or quietly take a deep breath. Then repeat as needed, and it will be needed many times. The reason I'm going over all this, which many or most of you already know, is that this practice of meditation is how we train ourselves to let go or give up everything. You know how it is when you're sitting in meditation and something comes up. Maybe it's urgent, something that needs to be done soon, now, for example. Sometimes it's an itchy eyebrow or an itchy nose. Maybe it's a beguiling memory, that night when you looked up and there was the most beautiful human being you'd ever seen, and he or she was looking at you in just the same way. This actually happened to me once, and of course I was 16 years old. Maybe that memory is so pleasant that you just don't want to relinquish it. But you do. The aspiration for practice is stronger than the attractions of samsara. So you're sitting in meditation, and eventually you realize the need to return to just sitting with no deliberate thought. And that's giving up everything. Reverend Master Jiyu used to say that we're all volunteers in this practice. We voluntarily yield up our attachment, our clinging, to thoughts, views, opinions, emotions. We let go of our attachment to the wish that the knee would stop hurting, the wish that the co-worker would stop being so obnoxious, that the neighbor at the dining table would stop slurping their food. We practice letting go while sitting in formal meditation, and then we carry this practice over into the world outside our meditation seat. Again, nobody ever said this was easy, and don't think I'm telling you, oh yeah, it's a snap. It takes wholehearted, ceaseless practice for the whole of our lives and possibly beyond. In childhood, I had the good fortune to take various music and dance lessons, and I left them all quite early, as I wasn't a dancer or a musician, and I lacked the discipline to practice them. Much later in my life, something I can't name or describe moved me to learn meditation. And this, whatever it was, has been powerful enough to enable me to keep at the practice. At first, I was in it for enlightenment. I eventually realized that I was just practicing for the sake of practice alone. Patience comes into it, one of the six paramitas, or practices of perfection, is patience. The Buddha taught that patience is the supreme austerity. We can keep this in mind when we get bored or restless, either during meditation or anywhere else. Here's another way to practice letting go. You can think of a view or opinion that is important or even precious to you. An example of this for me is feeling upset when seeing harm done by violence. One personal attitude of mine that arises from this is to be opposed to war. I can recall being shocked when I first came to the monastery and entered as a postulant, and I was shown in to sit watching TV in a room with many others, and what was on TV was a war movie. I was shocked. I thought, a war movie in a Buddhist monastery? This just didn't make sense to me at all. And I was then later shocked again when one of my seniors told me that Buddhism isn't pacifism. The point, at least for me with all this, was in letting go of this as an opinion at the level of judgmental mind. Reverend Master's teaching of I could be wrong comes into play here. Who am I to judge what is just and what is unjust? Letting go of this view doesn't mean forgetting about it or switching to a position in favor of using war to settle political disputes. What it means is letting go of my attachment or clinging to this view, letting go of the judgmental mind and opening the heart of meditation or wisdom, sitting still with it. This is where vow can come in. The first of the Bodhisattva vows says, however innumerable beings may be, I vow to save them all. I can vow to offer merit, that is, to share the benefits of practice, not only to those being harmed by war, but to everyone involved in carrying it out, including the leaders who order it, and all the way through to the insects killed on the battlefield. I can offer merit to all who hold the opinion contrary to my own, those who believe that military force is a good solution for problems, and to all beings in all worlds. And I can always remember my master's teaching. I could be wrong. Letting go, as I've been saying, isn't easy. It's challenging. Challenging is a word I'm teaching myself to use as a substitute for difficult or impossible. And there is a good reason for doing so. Here's a quote from Reverend Master Jiyu. Viewing the arising and vanishing of the elements from the place of meditation, that is, letting them arise and pass, makes it possible to go onward, not only through the fears that arise from attachment, but also through the grief that arises in this sad world. And at the moment of death, we literally have to go onward and give up everything as we think of that we think of as me, myself. One day at morning service, while chanting the scripture of great wisdom, I suddenly, for no reason, thought, I'm not me, and I'm not not me. Sounds pretty profound, or not, doesn't it? No fireworks went off, no bells rang. I just knew that this was somehow true. I let it go and continued chanting the scripture. Later, it seemed to me not only that, it seemed to me, whoops, not only was I not me and not not me, I'm just not, period. And that this is only part of the truth. And this is the best I can do at this point with the Buddha's teaching of anatta, or no separate individual self. I need to be willing to let that go. And something in me hopes that it's helpful at the moment of death. But this is getting ahead of myself. I don't think it's time for me to die right now, not this moment. The point I'm trying to make, and please forgive my digressions, is that sitting in our meditation is itself both a vow and its fulfillment. The vow to let go of everything, and at the same time, all acceptance. Now I'm going to close with this, what I find uplifting passage from Shohaku Okumura Roshi. Buddha Dharma is something that is universal, infinite, and absolute. As individual human beings, we are small and limited. But when we sit in meditation and let go of individuality, we are one with everything. We are infinite, absolute, part of the universe. When we give up our limited attitudes, there is no separation between this small individual self and the boundless universe. Thank you for being here. And now we'll all go onward through whatever comes next. Thank you.